Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review for June 13th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the local page with the article, Lincoln Rail Depot to Undergo Renovations. This is an article from Lincoln, written by Kevin Barlow of the Lee News Service. The railroad depot that has been at the heart of Lincoln for more than a century is about to undergo a $4.1 million renovation that should return it to rail service by next spring. When we are all done, we anticipate it being restored to what it once was, said City Administrator Clay Johnson. It's a hallmark of the community. We are looking forward to having it restored to honor the history of the community, but also looking forward to the future by having an upgraded, modern, high-speed rail facility, he said. City officials hope to open bids June 23rd and have a contractor working as soon as possible. It will take them about a year to get this done, so we are looking for late spring or early summer of 2017, Johnson said. The Chicago and Alton Railroad Depot opened November 15, 1911, on a platform near the spot where Abraham Lincoln christened the city in 1853. It was closed to the traveling public in 1972. It was sold and renovated 5 years later and named the Depot Restaurant. The restaurant and catering hall was last known as McCarty's at the depot, but it closed in 2013. When completed, the depot, which is about 4,000 square feet, will serve as a passenger station for high-speed rail until at least 2037. The city will have 700 square feet to use for promotional purposes. The plan includes restoring the brick Spanish mission-style exterior and adding new drop-off drive and parking area at the north end of the depot, at the corner of Pekin and Chicago Streets. Parking areas would be added on both the Sangamon Street and Chicago Street sides of the building. New landscaping and sidewalks are also in the plan. The Pekin Street Railroad crossing was closed permanently to vehicle and pedestrian traffic last week as construction crews began work on high-speed rail upgrades. The street will remain closed because the station and loading platform will be extended north through the crossing. About 20,000 people use Amtrak rail service at the station each year. The Illinois Department of Transportation is funding about $4 million of the project. The City of Lincoln will pay about $100,000 plus the cost of basic utilities once the depot opens. Muller & Muller Architects, based in Chicago, have drawn the preliminary plans for the project. The firm could not be reached for comment. And there's a photo that accompanies the article. It's a 2014 photo showing the mission-style railroad passenger depot in Lincoln, which was built by the Chicago and Alton Railroad and opened in 1911, but has been vacant since 2013. And an article from Decatur, written by Tony Reed. County Fair fills with thrills. Clamped in place and lying flat while punched through the air and dipped up and down on a Macon County Fair ride called the Cliffhanger, 13-year-old Jessica Cuttle was frank in her emotional self-assessment. Asked if she had been scared, the Decatur girl said, "Yeah, kinda." She would have volunteered more, but her brother Riley had seen the promised land in the shape of a round ride that twists its occupants up and down in a series of vicious circles. "Let's go to Wipeout! Come on, come on!" cried Riley, and they were off and flying again. Their mom, Jennifer Cuttill, looking on with a smile, said her kids are regulars at the fair. "All the events, rides, food, and the fun," she said, "we'd sure miss it if it was gone." The fair has certainly seen its fair shape of ups and downs over an extraordinary 160-year history. Once forged to drop popular livestock shows because of previous financial problems, the swine, goat, and other critters were back on the roster this year after first returning last year. The Macon County Fair Queen Pageant, another previous casualty, returned for 2016 and proved popular on Tuesday's opening night. The lineup of activities also included new stuff, such as professional wrestling and a karaoke contest, while a traditional favorite, Demolition Derby, wrapped up the fair's week Sunday. Crowds braving high heat and humidity were not tumultuous, but they were steady. Families were generally pleased with the prices and said paying $22 for an armband to ride any ride Sunday afternoon was a good deal for the kids. Sandra Tolbert, visiting from Alabama with her grandchildren Madison Moody, 6, and 4-year-old Annabelle Moody, said Macon County needs to realize it's got a good thing going. There's a nice variety of rides for the little ones, and I'm really impressed, Tolbert said. I really like it. Jim Stocker, first vice president of the fair, said the event had more than held its own this year. My philosophy about the fair is if we can break even and pay all of our bills, we've had a super fair, he added. And right now, I'm left with a smile on my face. And from Mattoon, Rob Stroud, Lee News Service writer, brings the article, Mattoon Public Library Checks In with Chess Lessons. Children in grades 3 through 5 are invited to learn about chess during a free program today at the Mattoon Public Library. The Introduction to Chess program will teach children about this game of strategy and to gauge interest in establishing a chess club in the fall, said library assistant Michael Fleming. The program will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. in the children's area on the second floor of the library, 1600 Charleston Avenue. Fleming said he will discuss how each of the game pieces on the chessboard moves and show the participants simple opening moves. He said chess is a social game in which opponents get to know each other through their playing styles. You not only have to learn the game, you have to learn your opponent, Fleming said. It's a game of strategy where you have to think 5 to 8 moves ahead. You have to predict what your opponent is going to do and try to make sure they don't know what you are going to do. Fleming said he has watched these strategies at work over the years while playing chess and while watching his sons play as part of the chess team at Mattoon High School. It's more exciting than you might think it would be, Fleming said. You hope the person you are rooting for will make the right move. Library assistant Stacy Fetters said exercise is just as important for children's minds as it is for their bodies, and playing chess provides a way for them to get this mental workout. She said playing chess on a game board against an opponent who is present there also provides a healthy break from digital games. Still, Fetters said a variety of free chess apps are available for when the game in person is not an option. She said a list of some of these apps will be provided during the introductory program, adding that players can start as novices and work their way up to higher skill levels. Children can be registered for the program by going online to http://mattoonlibrary.org or by calling the library at 217-234-2621. Children do not need to be library card holders to take part in the program. And from the At Work page, meet Jill Davis, co-chair of the Beautify Decatur Coalition. This article lists a number of questions asked of Jill Davis. Hometown, Decatur. Family, husband Dave and 2 children, Amanda Peters and Luke Davis. Also 4 grandchildren, Ava, Vince, Cameron, and Lana. Occupation, retired elementary teacher of 33 years, mostly in kindergarten. Education, MacArthur High School, bachelor's degree in education and master's degree in education from Eastern Illinois University. What is your I'd rather be bumper sticker? I'd rather be reading, preferably on a beach somewhere. I love reading all kinds of books that delve into subjects, cultures, and personalities I might not have the opportunity to experience in person. And discussing them in my book club is so enjoyable. The beach would be the icing on the cake. And your hobbies and interests? Spending time with my grandkids, traveling, reading, and promoting my children's book, ABC The Beatles. My first job. First job ever was detasseling corn. I only lasted about a week at that. why I do what I do. I love teaching children. It is who I was for 33 years. Now I have the privilege to fulfill another passion of mine, which is helping to beautify our Decatur community. Personal approaches to challenges. I try to double down and work to see various alternate approaches that might work. Community involvement. Co-chair of the Beautify Decatur Coalition, co-chair of Let's Keep Decatur Beautiful Contest, Grow Decatur, Garden Club, PEO, Delta Kappa Gamma Society for Women Educators, All States Club, and St. John's Lutheran Church. What is the Beautify Decatur Coalition? The Beautify Decatur Coalition is a volunteer group whose mission is to instill a mindset in the residents and businesses of the Decatur community to constantly create and maintain a clean, beautiful public presence. Its initiatives include establishing no litter zones, promoting Adopt a Street and Adopt a Green Space, organizing regular area cleanups, planting the 60-plus downtown and El Dorado street planters, corridor enhancement for our thoroughfares in and out of the city, school beautification, and neighborhood beautification activities. Why are community beautification efforts so important? When a neighborhood or a business is clean and attractive, it invites you in. Businesses attract more customers, and neighborhoods take pride in their homes. It becomes a contagious attitude that benefits the entire community. The most notable project undertaken by the group is the Let's Keep Decatur Beautiful Business Beautification Contest. How did it start and how has it grown? When I retired from teaching, I developed this desire to do something about litter in the community. I was put in touch with Mark Avery, who shared my passion and wanted to do more in this area as well. Mark wanted to focus on the business community, so we came up with the idea of a contest to promote and reward businesses who take care of their property and have nice curb appeal. The first year, we had 40 businesses register for the contest and had 3 awards. Now, the contest has grown to the point of needing a committee of myself, Susan Avery, and Sue O'Reilly. Last year, 96 businesses registered, and we gave 11 awards plus trophies courtesy of Caterpillar. It's definitely a win-win for the businesses and the community. It is free to register, and the businesses get great publicity as well. We are very thankful to our sponsors who make the contest possible. Go to www.beautifuldecaturbusiness.com for more information and to register by June 10th. What can a business do to support these efforts? Many of our Decatur area businesses are already beautiful, but we encourage business owners and managers to take a step back and take a fresh look at their property. Perhaps a good power washing or coat of paint would freshen the exterior, or a regular plan put in place to keep the weeds pulled and the litter picked up. Making sure the dumpster lid is closed and secure is a good preventative measure to enforce. Trimmed landscaping and a planter of flowers by the door are simple to do and don't require much time or money to implement. Enhancing key community corridors has also been discussed. What areas are being targeted, why, and what types of changes are being proposed? The thoroughfares in and out of the city give our visitors their first impression of Decatur. We need them to be as clean and active and attractive as possible. While we are currently working on making them all no litter zones, we are focusing on 22nd Street and Pershing Road with planned litter pickups, roundtable discussion meetings, and landscaping design proposals. We are looking for donor sponsors to help make this possible. On 22nd Street, we would like to install sculptures that highlight and celebrate the industrial heritage and backbone of the Decatur community. Our first sculpture is slated to be erected in late June by Caterpillar. We are very excited about art on 22nd Street. We are also ready to begin some landscaping on our first median on Pershing Road. There's been a lot of emphasis on what businesses can and should be doing. What should residents be doing to support the effort? Sue Lawson of the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations is on the Beautify Decatur Coalition, and we are working together on neighborhood cleanups, incentive events, and making the neighborhoods no-litter zones as well. The main thing residents can do is be aware of litter and to pick it up whenever they come across it on their walks, bike rides, and other outdoor activities. Of course, keeping our own homes and neighborhoods clean, weed-free, and beautiful is our collective responsibility. We must work together to make Decatur beautiful. And from Arcola, Arcola Festival celebrates Raggedy Ann. The irony of her childhood disinterest in dolls, in general, was not lost on the granddaughter of Johnny Gruel, the Arcola native who created Raggedy Ann doll, as she attended the Raggedy Ann rally on Saturday. When she was a child, Joni Gruel Wanamaker never really liked dolls, even Raggedy Ann. She said her father told her she had even thrown one out of a car window before. "I was not a doll person," Gruel Wanamaker said. "My favorite things were stuffed dogs, cats, and birds, any kind of little animal." She did, however, fall in love with the stories formed around the red-headed doll. "I thought, when I grow up, I am going to have a tree with cookies on it," Gruel Wanamaker said. A lot of the books had cookie trees. Over the years, she came to understand the fascination people had with the 100-plus-year-old doll. "There is something so magical about Raggedy Ann," she said. Years ago, the granddaughter even moved from Atlanta, Georgia, to Arcola, the birthplace of her grandfather, to help facilitate the Raggedy Ann Festival. Now, she continues to take part in events geared toward keeping her family's legacy alive, including the Raggedy Ann Rally, a 4-day celebration. While not as large in attendance from previous years, according to vendors, fans of Raggedy Ann still filled the Arcola Center to share their love of the doll and the beliefs fans believe it invokes in people, such as love and friendship. The rally drew people from across the country to participate in this collective celebration of the doll and what the doll means to collectors coming from as far as Tampa, Florida. Lou Jean Britton, avid Raggedy Ann collector from Tampa, has taken the trek to Arcola since 1993. Her fascination for Raggedy Ann grew from the replacement of one of her dolls from when she was a child that had been torn up by her dog at the time. Her father got her an old ratty Raggedy Ann doll at a flea market. "From there, a love was born," Britton said. "I love what she represents. I love the spirit and fellowship that always follows her." Britton has collected thousands of items over the years since she started in 1986, filling rooms with Raggedy Ann merchandise. Britton is not alone in her fanaticism for Ann. Greta Eber of Dayton, Ohio, said she was drawn to the doll's mystique because of how relatable and lovable the character is. "She is kind of worn, but you love her that much more," Eber said. "As a woman, she is kind of how I feel. I am the mom of 4 kids, so I kind of feel raggedy on some days, but I can relate to that. That just makes her lovable." And from the Life Pages, Tribune News Service writes, "Horror novelist Hill imagines fiery end to world in his new book. Some say the world will end in fire. If his latest book is any indication, Joe Hill agrees. In The Fireman, Hill's 4th novel, a pandemic threatens to wipe out the human race. But instead of viruses or vampires, this apocalypse is caused by a mysterious spore that infects its hosts and causes them to spontaneously combust. The self-immolatio, inspired by what the affable Hill calls a dreadful adolescent fixation of mine, can be controlled if the host stays calm. But who can remain serene when death squads are hunting you? The setup is dark, but Hill, 43, says that's business as usual for a horror writer. I think a lot of writers of thrillers and scary fiction will take almost any situation and spin it into the worst-case scenario," he says. "It's a useful skill until it turns against you. God, everything scares me in a way. I have a nervous imagination. I'm quick to take small details and spin upsetting scenarios out of them. I'm the kind of guy who can't feel a lump on his skull without being sure he has brain cancer, though I've gotten better over the years. Yet the fireman indicates a continuing fascination with the bad things that can happen to good people when humankind is under attack. With its sprawling cast of characters, the novel is large in size, scope, and depth. It's more urgent on a global scale than our Hill's previous novels, Heart-Shaped Box, in which a retired rocker buys a dead man's suit and is subsequently haunted by its murderous ghost, or Horns, in which a guy wakes up one day with horns on his forehead, or NOS 482, in which a soul-sucking fiend driving a 1938 Rolls-Royce Wraith kidnaps children and transports them to Christmas Land, which is not exactly a happy land of enchantment. But for all its carnage, the fireman is deeply concerned with its people. Hill may have picked up his knack of creating multidimensional characters from his dad, Stephen King, mom, Tabitha, and brother, Owen, are also writers. The fireman's protagonist, Nurse Harper Grayson, watches in horror as her New England community succumbs to the explosive threat. She tries to help the sick at the hospital when she discovers she's pregnant and infected and finds herself fighting for her life against her husband, who prefers the relative peace of a double suicide to living in a terrifying new world. Harper escapes with the help of a shadowy, smoldering, quite literally, figure who calls himself the fireman, who introduces her to a group of the infected hiding out at a summer camp. But religious fanaticism begins to pervade the enclave, and a homicidal madman, who calls himself the Marlboro Man, is scouring the countryside with his crews, searching for the sick and murdering them. Hill is dealing here with the end of the world as we know it, but the book also displays an insouciant sense of humor, an affection for pop culture, especially music, and an admiration for human resilience, something Hill believes must exist in any dystopian fantasy. Apocalyptic stories have always been popular, going back to the Book of Revelations, says Hill, who's also the author of the story collection 20th Century Ghosts and the comic book series Lock and Key. We've become, as a culture, increasingly aware of how fragile our happiness and contentment is. The apocalyptic story makes you look at how easily it can all be swept away. Every generation faces an apocalypse. The end of the world will happen. Eventually you'll be dead. That's the nature of the remorseless march of time. But the next generation takes its place, and good apocalyptic stories like The Walking Dead insist on the continuation of life. The Fireman is already drawing comparisons to such novels as Lord of the Flies and Justin Cronin's The Passage trilogy. But naturally, the most impossible similarity to overlook is its relationship to The Stand, published by Hill's dad in 1978. However, Hill says The Stand, to which he pays homage in numerous ways, wasn't what was on his mind when he started writing. I was thinking about the Harry Potter novels and focused on that structure, he says. About two-thirds of the way through, I realized The Stand and The Fireman had similarities. You have two choices when you see an influence casting its shadow on your own work. You can try to run away or turn around and embrace it. It's always better to embrace it and have fun with it. I went back through the story and made changes. I looked at places where my dad had done interesting things in The Stand and tried to figure out how to subvert them. And the column New at the Library reports on fiction, Beasts and Children by Amy Parker. From the tense territory of a sagging grand porch in Texas to a gated community in steamy Thailand to a lonely apartment in nondescript suburbia, these linked stories unwind the lives of three families as they navigate ever-shifting landscapes. Wry and sharp, dark and subversive, they keep watch as these characters make the choices that will change the course of their lives and run into each other in surprising, unforgettable ways. The Bowmans are declining Texas gentry, heirs to an airline fortune surrounded by a patriarch's stuffed trophies and lost dreams. They will each be haunted by the past as they strive to escape its force. The Fosters are diplomats' kids who might as well be orphans. Jill and Maisie grow up privileged amid poverty, powerless to change the lives of those around them, and uncertain whether they have the power to change their own. The Guzmans have been moved between Colombia and the United States for two generations, each seeking opportunity for the next, only to find that the American dream can be as crushing as it is elusive. Amy Parker's debut collection considers with an unfailingly observant eye our failures and our successes, our fractures and our connections, our impact and our evanescence. She marks herself a worthy heir to the long tradition of smart women casting cool and careful glances at the American middle class. In nonfiction, The Abundance by Annie Dillard. In recognition of the Pulitzer Prize-winning author's long and lauded career as a master essayist, a landmark collection, including her most beloved pieces and some rarely seen work, rigorously curated by the author herself. The Abundance reminds us that Dillard's brand of novelized nonfiction pioneered the form long before it came to be widely appreciated. Intense, vivid, and fearless, her work endows the true and seemingly ordinary aspects of life. A commuter chases Snowball, throwing children through neighborhood streets. A teenager memorizes Rimbaud's poetry, with beauty and irony, inviting readers into sweeping landscapes to join her in exploring the complexities of time and death with a sense of humor. On one page, an eagle falls from the sky with a weasel attached to its throat. On another, a man walks into a bar. Reminding us of the indelible contributions of this formative figure in contemporary nonfiction, The Abundance showcases Annie Dillard's enigmatic, enduring genius, as Dillard herself wishes it to be marked. And a middle grade book, Rules for Stealing Stars by Corey Ann Haidu. 11-year-old Silly, short for Priscilla, and her three older sisters have always tiptoed around their alcoholic mother and her unpredictable moods. Things are even worse this summer now that the family has moved into their mother's childhood home in New Hampshire, and Silly's sisters are acting especially distant. Soon, Silly comes to share in the secret her sisters have been keeping from her. The house's closets can transport them to a magical realm. And the local page briefs from Decatur for retired teachers. The Decatur Area Retired Teachers Association will meet at 11 a.m. Thursday, June 16th at the new Mount Zion High School Fieldhouse. All retired teachers are invited. Following the tour, a meeting, lunch, and program will be in the Fletcher Park Recreation Building. Lunch reservations are $10. Send reservations to Linda Gross, 19 Higdon Drive, Decatur, 62521. And from Shelbyville, Decatur man drowns. A 21-year-old Decatur man apparently drowned Saturday afternoon in Lake Shelbyville. Brandon R. Breeze was swimming with friends at the 9th Street Beach. Friends said he swam beyond the designated swimming area and disappeared. After searching for him, they called for help about 4 p.m. Rescue workers searched late on Saturday and recovered the body at 12:30 p.m. Sunday. Shelby County Coroner Brian Green said an autopsy will be held today and the investigation is continuing. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, June 13th, 2016. Please stay tuned.